Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice. Mona Shaw, how are you doing today?
I'm very well. Surviving the snow, Mark.
Surviving the snow. It's cold down here in Atlanta, and I know New York has gotten a tremendous amount of snow this season. In fact, you guys got, the second biggest snowfall ever recorded a few weeks ago?
Yes, and it was very slim, slimly the second. It almost was the first.
Oh, my goodness. Well, hopefully by the time that this episode airs, it'll be beautiful and sunny outside. But you know what? It's already sunny inside because I know you had a special guest that you brought us today. You're already laughing because I'm bringing this up. But I'm excited to talk to her because I haven't talked to Courtney in, almost 18 months. A person listening right now is probably wondering, Courtney who? So we have Courtney Creedon on. She works at EB5 Investors Magazine. And really, before I go off too much further, Courtney, say hello.
Hello. It's nice to speak with you again, Mark, and thank you, Mona, for inviting me. This all kind of fell together and worked out nicely that we're able to have this discussion today.
Definitely, definitely. And I'm obviously glad it all pulled together when Mona told me the other day that you would be joining us. I was ecstatic. Like I said, it's been 18 months since we had a conversation on another show, and to talk to you again. And I realized things have evolved and you've got even more experience to share with us. And this is going to be great. Well, if you could tell the audience a little bit about what you do.
Sure. So I think last time we spoke, Mark, I was the acting editor-in-chief of EB5 Investors Magazine, and that involved working with our editorial board, working with contributing authors like Mona, and putting the whole magazine together. I've since transitioned a bit out of that role and am working more as a contributing author. So I assist a bit more behind the scenes. The main editorial role has been transferred over to our wonderful editor, Mary Treese. And I work, like I said, a bit more behind the scenes and helping out with the editorial process and helping out editing and writing articles, but have done also a lot of work with our conferences, which is another big arm of our company, as well as some work on expanding our international reach. So those are definitely, I think, issues that will come up in our conversation today and will be great topics to discuss.
Yeah, certainly. And Mona, you've been to a couple of the EB5 Investors Conference, haven't you?
Yes, we have. Well, the purpose of this particular podcast, Mark, was to discuss marketing, and we could think of no better person to start the discussion than the leaders in the field right now in marketing, which is EB5 Investors Magazine, not only in their magazine, but also in their conferences.
Certainly. Courtney, now you're in the hot seat because I know Mona has a few questions for you.
Yeah.
I have a few questions for you. We'll go ahead and get right into it. Mona, I'll go ahead and defer to you because I know you got a couple of good questions lined up for Courtney.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Mark. And again, Courtney, this is really to our audience who are wondering why you're here. But marketing is so essential in EB5. Without marketing, developers don't get investors. Investors don't find projects. But at the same time, there's a lot which rests on marketing. And a magazine like yours, what kind of reach does your magazine have, first of all?
Yeah, so when I started out in 2013, it was in our middle of our second issue, and it was still a relatively small circulation. We are now at about a little over 20,000 subscribers for our English edition. So that's between actual physical hard copies and our electronic version. And at over 7,000 for our Chinese version of the magazine. So
Wow. We're
not only, distributed domestically in the US, but also in China. And as I was discussing with you, Mona, before the show, we even have quite a bit of interest from Dubai, from the Middle East, from Iran, from, even South America, Brazil.
India, I believe.
India as well.
All of the East.
Really,
yes.
So a lot of, beyond China, obviously that's always going to be, or in the foreseeable future, will always be the largest market for EB5. But, you know, our magazine does have a wider reach than just a U.S. or just a Chinese audience.
Right. And the feedback that I get from people who go to your magazine and stuff is that there's so much out there, they're confused. So again, like the purpose of these podcasts, to give some information out, not only to developers, people who are thinking of EB5 and investors, is to try and push them into the right direction. You know, a lot of best practices as well. Which brings me to my first real question for you, Courtney. If I was an investor and I see a project which is advertised in your magazine, do I feel confident that EB5 Investors Magazine has done due diligence on that project? Can I safely go and talk to that project knowing they've been in EB5 Magazine?
So you're starting out with the tough questions.
Yes.
Right away. So, you know, I think this question kind of can be, or my answer to this can be more broadly applied to the industry as a whole. And in that, yes, I think what is special about our publication is that our business development team and really everyone at our publication makes an effort to really get to know the people that we work with, get to know our advertisers, get to know our authors. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, you know, in the same way you wouldn't expect the New York Times to vet every single advertiser on their pages, you know, our printing of an advertisement is primarily a business decision. And so, you know, we don't have the time or the resources nor the responsibility really to vet every single project. So, yes, I mean, we do make an effort to get to know the individuals behind the advertisement. But at the end of the day, it really is up to the investor. And I would advise any investor, as I'm sure Mona would as well, to do, you know, not only their own due diligence, but work with trusted advisors to undertake that due diligence as well. And, you know, not to rely just on a pretty picture in a magazine when choosing a project. But it absolutely is useful to be able to open a magazine and see some kind of tangible project and really, you know, allow the investor to maybe envision themselves as part of that project. So I would say we unfortunately don't have the resources to vet every single advertiser that comes our way. We do try our best to know who's behind the project and to know who, you know, if we get information that's very clearly telling us that this is a horrible project or has failed or whatever, then obviously we would evaluate that. But I would advise anyone who encounters any project in any type of situation, whether it's in a magazine, whether it's your attorney, whether it's at a conference, to really undertake their own due diligence as well.
Let me ask a question because I kind of want to jump in here and to really clarify. So, you know, EB5 Investors Magazine contains really a lot of content, a lot of articles. You know, some are editorial pieces, some are written by attorneys. Like Mona, I know you've written a couple of articles for the magazine.
Well, quite a few, actually.
Quite a few. Yeah, I've had at least one in there. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll say a total of one article in the magazine. There are those articles, but there's also advertisements. So, and even though you may not perform due diligence, or, you know, follow the SEC guidelines for all this due diligence because you're not really endorsing, but you do follow, you know, FTC, you know, Federal Trade Commission guidelines and say, you know, this is an advertisement. It's very clear, you know, which ones are ads, right?
Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's the dividing line. And we may get to this in our discussion later, the differences between advertisements and articles and where those sometimes overlap. But there's definitely a very clear line between what is an advertisement and, you know, what is an article published by EB5 Investors Magazine, either written by a contributing author and published by us or written directly by the magazine. And there's definitely a clear line. All our articles are definitely vetted where, you know, it goes through a very rigorous editorial process. And we're making sure that any authors that participate in our magazine are absolutely qualified and know their stuff, like Mona, who has passed the test a few times. But yes, there's definitely a line between advertisements and articles.
Right.
Courtney, if I could just ask, because I do know the answer to this. They always say that a good lawyer should know the answer to the question before they ask it. But does the magazine, if an investor wants to contact the magazine directly in relation to either an ad relating to an attorney firm or a project, how does the magazine handle it? And do you make any money out of this?
The magazine doesn't, you know, as a magazine, place investors or work to necessarily refer investors. We kind of see ourselves more as a platform to disperse knowledge. And some of that does foster business connections, either through our magazine or through our conferences. You know, for example, if we have an investor who reads an article written by Mona and says, oh, I really like what she has to say. She sounds like a very knowledgeable woman and I'd like to get in touch with her. We're definitely happy to facilitate that process as much as possible, but we don't, you know, we don't take finder's fees. We don't recommend, certain
yes.
projects yes. over another. You know, we really are trying yeah. to be transparent and really be a hub for knowledge. And if, you know, if we are able to facilitate business relationships, whether through our magazine or at our conferences, all the better. But it's definitely not our primary role in the industry.
Right. Well, under the Jobs Act, I mean, and SEC regulations, the projects are allowed to advertise. And I do feel that a project which has transparency will advertise. And a project which is a little more shifty and is relying on closeted information and investors just going to them because they have pretty pictures or something will not advertise because they won't put themselves under the same scrutiny.
Absolutely. And that's what I would say as well is, you know, if you're not doing things the right way in EB-5, so to speak, you're probably not going to want to be in our magazine. We have a lot of legislators in our audience, a lot of, you know, members of the SEC that are looking and seeing what's going on. You know, we do have a relatively big reach and a relatively large presence in the industry. And so, you know, luckily we are able to attract, generally speaking, people who are in the business legitimately and going about things the right way. So that does make it a little easier for us.
Well, that's for the investor. Now, we have a lot of project clients, and project clients are always trying to get investors, and they do have a limited budget when it comes to marketing. So before they go out and they spend on advertising and conferences, we do always recommend that they do come to a magazine with a reach as wide as yours. But without playing on the magazine, but very, very genuinely, what advice would you give to a developer who is looking to get his project out there?
Sure. I mean, I think absolutely advertising in the magazine is something that brings a lot of value to people. It can also be something that's scary to commit to if you don't have a large advertising budget and you're not sure what the value, you know, what your return on investment is going to be, so to speak. You know, there are definitely other ways to get involved, whether it's through writing articles on your own or working with a law firm that you may work with to produce an article. I think attending our conferences is another great way to both learn more about EB-5, but I think the big value there is the networking, as yeah. I think Mona would agree. And I think in a lot of these markets, you know, it's built on trust. Investors.
Absolutely. And I mean, we work with investors who've come to us maybe a year or 2 years ago, believe it or not. They have time to choose. They don't all want to rush mm-hmm. into something. And they take their time. And if they see something which is out there, it adds to the credibility without a doubt. A lot of projects don't want somebody who's going to take a year to decide. Right. But it may be a regional center or maybe a company who have got several projects. It probably benefits them.
Absolutely. And I think maybe what some projects that are new to the industry fail to realize is, you know, unlike, and Mona can speak to this as well, unlike 5 years ago or even less, you know, where there weren't as many projects in the market, there are a lot of really legitimate, really exciting projects in the market right now. So it's not as simple as just building up a project and, you know, showing off some flashy pictures and flashy brochures and, you know, signing up investors by the thousands. It takes a lot more work than that.
Right. And before I go into my next sort of questions, Mark, I don't know if you have any questions in this particular area for Courtney.
Oh, you know, I'll jump in if I do.
Yeah, sure. Well, the thing is that, Courtney, you've been with EB-5 Magazine over these few years and you've seen the market change. The market has heavily changed. A few years ago, it was all about the regional center who could say, yes, I've done X amount of projects. Now, people out there have got the ability to approach lawyers themselves, do their own investigation. There's more resources out there. And I think what's changing as well is the way an investor will choose a project.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, especially with there have been a few high-profile scandals in the industry,
which
you know, unfortunately came about from people not necessarily doing things the right way. And that, sometimes can make investors more cautious, but also just the wealth of good projects now. And so an investor, you know, it's no longer enough just to have
previous experience,
experience, you know, or just to say I've done X number of projects. They really are doing their homework. You know, it's no longer enough for them to just say, oh, my agent knows so-and-so. They really, you know, they want to come see the project. They want to know who's behind it, what their experience is, that they've been successful in similar types of projects. You know, if someone's building a high-rise real estate project, they want to know that that person has experience building high-rise real estate projects.
Right. And the other thing is that we've had for at least the last couple of years is that individual projects will go out and go on their own. They don't want to necessarily put up a regional center, and they'll just rent a regional center. So then they just advertise themselves. I suppose that's really where, again, your magazine is starting to really educate people. So I feel that your magazine really does have reach, not just for investors, but for developers as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the range of players that we're able to attract in terms of our advertisers, but also in terms of our contributing authors, really, you know, when I was at the helm, I really made it a point to try to incorporate a variety of articles that would appeal to a variety of audiences. It's not always going to be immigration attorneys. It's not always going to be corporate and securities attorneys. Yeah. But there are also a lot of project developers out there reading the magazine and wondering, you know, what do I do next? Or there, you know, are even investors out there reading the magazine, and those that are really sophisticated investors that really want to know as much about the program as possible. You know, there are those investors as well that are very interested in the articles. So I think that's been a priority for us, is really trying to appeal to the industry as a whole,
right?
While still being specific and technical enough to actually be useful to professionals like Mona or to corporate and securities attorneys who have been in the industry for years.
I know now social media is huge, and we actually have a whole podcast on social media, especially in China, where everything is social media. Mm-hmm. Your magazine is lovely, it's hard, it's glossy, but there's a limit to how much you can do.
Absolutely.
in 60 pages, which comes out four times a year.
Absolutely.
So have EB5 Magazine really delved into social media at this point?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, we definitely have our Twitter and Facebook accounts and all of that, like everyone else. But we do also on our English site have regular blog posts that are written by different attorneys and professionals in our network. But especially in terms of the Chinese audience, like Mona said, a lot of it is it's a very mobile audience. They're not necessarily tethered to a desk or looking at their desktop or even a laptop. And so we do have our Chinese magazine that is published electronically, but we also have a presence on WeChat as well, which is probably one of the biggest methods of communicating and sharing information in China.
Well, for anybody who doesn't know what WeChat is a social media app which could be described as their version of Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn all in one.
Right. And so it's very, you know, very powerful. We've tried to, you know, recognizing the differences between the Chinese market and the U.S. market, it's important to adapt your strategies. And I think that can be said not only for us, but for projects and anyone wanting to market in the Chinese marketplace, is, you know, that's really important, is that social media, that mobile media reach. Like I said, WeChat has been a very important tool for us. We're EB5 Magazine on WeChat, and that allows us to, you know, not only publish updates about, oh, our next magazine is being released on this date or our conference is on this date, but allows us to kind of cover current events in real time if there are important developments in the industry, but also to translate and publish our relevant articles in Chinese, and you know, really just lets people become plugged in to our platform, even if they're not opening up a hard copy magazine.
Yeah, I certainly would agree with Courtney. Social media is a big thing, especially in any industry, legal industry, and even immigration industry, and a dive even deeper, business immigration, and even more niche in EB5. I'm pretty active on social media on the various different platforms, as well as new media. And one of the things I found is not so much of getting information out there, which is key. I mean, you can get information out there a lot quicker than you can with print media, but it's also to have a relationship with your connections, your friends, your followers, and to engage with them and converse with them. I mean, they can reach out and interact on an article, whether it's a blog post or a tweet. and ask a question. And I think it's important for the people that initially creating that content to interact and engage with those people around the article. So if they ask a question about something that was mentioned in a blog post or link to a tweet or a LinkedIn conversation, you know, all these platforms have have their ways for listeners and readers to interact, that, you know, honestly, the original creators jump in and clarify or, you know, help lead them down the path of discovery. So that's something else about social media that I think is great, is not so much getting the word out there faster and getting it out there on different platforms as well as mobile, but also recognizing that people can share and interact with you. So as they do that, acknowledge them and help them out.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it being a primarily print publication in this age of new media, that's absolutely a limitation of traditional media. And if you're reading an article in a magazine once every quarter, it's hard to have that conversational feedback. And, you know, to the extent that I know the authors, I can reach out to Mona and say, hey, what did you think about this? But there are a lot of authors that I don't necessarily have that relationship with.
Right, right.
You know, so aside from seeing them at conferences a few times a year.
Which is important.
Exactly.
Meeting face to face, that's the strongest connection possible. And I don't want to hijack it on social media, because I know we're going to have a total episode where we're going to really dive deep on some of these platforms and how to use them and some best practices. But since it was mentioned, I did want to kind of jump in and throw my two cents in.
Right. Well, the next question I was going to ask, Courtney, I know you've mentioned conferences an awful lot. Again, I'm a developer. I want to get my project out. I want investors to know. I have a limited budget. I can't spend wildly, and I'm okay, I'm going to advertise. I'm convinced on that. Is it really worth my while to come to your conferences? Should I spend that kind of money coming to your conferences? Will it achieve anything? Will I get investors out of it? How would you answer that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big question for a lot of our, you know, a lot of people in our network. And our last conference that Mona attended in Vegas, which was just a few weeks ago, we had over 100 Chinese agents.
Yeah, no, you had
over 800. Yes, over 800 attendants and over 100 Chinese agents present.
We actually had more than Chinese, because I met people from Brazil.
Exactly,
and
not just
India,
Chinese agents. So I should clarify, over 100 agents. You know, the majority of whom were Chinese, but as Mona mentioned, also agents from all around the world. And so the value, at least how I see it in terms of the conference, is, you know, I'm much more on the content side of things than the business side of things. So obviously I'm going to value the panels and the education and all of that, you know, and that's all well and good. But I think the real value of the conferences is the networking and, you know, that face-to-face meeting where, yeah, you know, we've exchanged a few emails, but until you can really meet someone face-to-face, have a discussion, you know, even have a cocktail with them after the conference, that's really where the value is. And I actually spoke with quite a lot of people who ended up being sponsors at our event, or who ended up having booths at our event, and they expressed those same reservations. You know, they said, honestly, I was kind of hesitant. I didn't know if it would be worth it. I didn't know what the value would be. And after being there and seeing the not only the amount of people that we could attract, but the variety of people that we attracted, and also just the way that our conferences are set up now in terms of being very, you know, we try to have a lot of space for people to actually do business. And I think, honestly, I think if I were spending my, you know, marketing dollars, the conference is really, well, really a useful place to do
it. I mean, what I can add to this is our real-time experience with the clients that we have suggested that they do have a booth at your conference. What we have found is that it doesn't matter how good your marketing material is. There's always something there that an investor will be confused with. It doesn't replace an actual face-to-face meeting. And what happens at a conference is that people do come up and ask you questions. Mm-hmm. You have somebody there who's able to talk and speak about it, and then suddenly they understand your project. They either like it or they hate it, but at least they make a decision. So I see the value of that very much. I feel that the more, if you have a project and you want to get it out, the more you can get it out and speak. And to me, one of the biggest values of your conferences is that we can speak in English and we can be understood.
That's true. That is, you know, that is a big difference in that we are hosting. We do host, we have a conference coming up May 8th and 9th in Shanghai and one in March in Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam. But our U.S. conferences are, you know, I think probably our most successful ones. And that really, like Mona said, makes it easier on project developers. They don't have to necessarily travel halfway across the world and find someone to speak Chinese for them or struggle through their own elementary Chinese. And so that's a definite advantage as
Right, right. And some advice to developers out there. It's not all about just getting the, you know, the, your project out. You need to know what the competition is and you need to know what the competition is saying and what they're writing. And these conferences are great.
You know, I was actually going to jump on. And in fact, it's not even so much, you know, competition, it's co-opetition because, you know, really they're trying to bring investors in into the, well, they primarily want their projects, but really to bring investors in. And I think that one booth getting to know another booth, one project getting to know another project.
It makes a huge difference.
It does make a huge difference. Plus, it's really good to know what this project does and what they stand for and how they go about doing it, because it will also help you clarify your message. Even if you don't have, I personally believe, even if you don't have like an active investable project, but you're looking at going down this path, I think attending the EB5 Investors Conference is a good idea, even if you don't have a booth, just so you can cross network across the industry, understand what people are doing, and really understand, and what I am about to do, is it going to make the industry better? Am I going to differentiate myself?
Yes.
Or am
yes.
I going to be a Me Too type project? And honestly, I think the more diverse projects out there, it really benefits everybody, because even the ones that are well established, you're not hurting them. You're really, you know, highlighting how much they are different from you. So maybe an investor that was kind of on the fence realizes that the project was for them, or maybe it wasn't for them and it is for you. But I think it really helps clarify for the investors that they have found the right project. And that's one thing I really love about these conferences.
Yeah. And kind of on a personal note, I'm, like I said, I'm usually behind the scenes and I'm not in our business development department, despite how much I've been, you know, talking about our magazine and conferences. But it's the most exciting time for me as well in getting to meet all these people that I've worked with and build relationships. I mean, now Mona and I previously had only really communicated via email and seen each other once a year. And now we're sitting together in New York City doing a podcast. And so it really, you know, not only for developers and investors, but for us as well in the magazine, I mean, it's so exciting to be able to use the conferences as an opportunity to build our relationships and to strengthen our relationships.
Yeah, and on the business development side, the cost aspect, it is relatively cheaper than going overseas. I know overseas you feel like you are actually going to meet the people, but our experience has been that if these conferences are successful enough, the media that gets out there, it gets to the right people, and you're spending a lot less money.
And I think, you know, as I mentioned, our agent, the presence of agents in at our last conference, and that's definitely something that was wildly successful, and that will be continued as well. And that, you know, hopefully it may no longer be necessary to fly to China all the time to meet agents and to meet investors. And so that's something that's been very exciting for us to develop.
Certainly. Mona, do you have any last questions for Courtney?
Yeah, I think, you know, point that of this podcast is the marketing issue, that this is just one way to market, but it's an important way to market. And we're not here just to promote. We're not here to promote EB5 magazine. And as much as we really hold Courtney and EB5 magazine up there as one of the best, we think that their views and their opinions are something that we would like to share. I have one last question for Courtney, though. Courtney, as I've said, we hold EB5 magazine and especially yourself in very high regard. Last year was a very, how can I say, turbulent, unusual year with all of the legislation activity. Did EB5 magazine have an opinion? Because there were 2 to 3 camps, diverging opinions. Did they side with one camp over the other?
Ooh, another tricky question. So I don't want to comment on behalf of the magazine in that regard, other than to say that we have worked and continue to work very closely with legislators and with stakeholders and, you know, various coalitions and organizations within the industry to fight for not only the extension of the program, but hopefully the reform and the strengthening of the program.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much,
Courtney. My very diplomatic, politically correct answer.
Courtney, thank you so much for, you know, properly walking that line. It's a very hard question, but you walked it with complete journalistic integrity, you know, nothing short of what I would expect from you. So thank you so much for sharing that with us and coming on today's show.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you, Courtney. And thank you very much for coming in and being part of this podcast.
Well, thank you for having me, Mona. It's been great to be able to discuss all these issues, and hopefully it can be helpful to some of your listeners.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw and Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Or call the office at 212-233-7473. Don't worry about trying to write all this down, as it's already embedded in your podcast player of choice. The contact information and other valuable resources can be found there. Although this concludes our discussion on EB-5 marketing with materials such as EB-5 Investors Magazine, we're going to explore social media with EB-5 in a later episode. But in our very next episode, we're going to have another EB-5 industry leader, Bob Slaposky, and we're going to be talking about escrow and banking as it relates to EB-5. Make sure you don't miss it by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.